At 8:34, I say a very, very good morning to Danny Joffe. He is head of legal at Hollard Insurance. Thank you for taking the time to join us.
How's it, Howard? Nice to be here.
It's awesome to have you. So we've been getting a tremendous amount of questions from our listeners, especially around the Gauteng Johannesburg area, about their responsibility in with all of these storms that have been taking place. Because we certainly have seen some quite violent storms. We've seen some, you know, the Capes having fires all over the show. We having storms, it would seem. And you know, we all have access to information. We have access to warnings. We know a storm is coming. We, you know. And I guess the question is, what is our responsibility from an insurance perspective? So let's assume I've got a car, it's parked in my driveway, I know that there's a storm coming, but I just don't feel like going outside to move it into the garage. Does that put me at risk should my car suffer hail damage?
Sure. So just to answer that, there's two types of responsibilities that someone who's insured would have. The first one would be what's in the policy, what you kind of force the insured to do, have burglar bars, put jewelry in the safe, have valuation.
Right.
You know, that's legal. So if the insured doesn't really do that, they won't pay the claim, effectively insurers. Then there's more sort of gray area where there's a clause that says you must just take all reasonable precautions to try and prevent loss as best as you can. And that sort of fits into this area. So,
yes.
I mean, what I do about lightning protection, because we live in the lightning belt of the world, basically, where I see lightning claims coming through from this area. So then do I have to get surge protectors? Do I, as you talk about the hail, do I have to put my car inside? So policies generally don't have those as clauses, if you like. So what do I do if I go and visit a friend and, you know, I park outside and there's a hailstorm?
Exactly. Yeah.
What are my obligations? So in those situations, insurance is there to cover you. Insurance is there to say, if you have damage, they're there to compensate for that damage. So yes, they do send warnings, but that's more done as a risk mitigation thing than as a legal thing. Unless you are absolutely reckless. So if you're renovating your house and you take the roof off to do the renovations and you know that there's a rainstorm coming, you just leave your expensive jewelry and your expensive furniture in the room. That would be unacceptable. Then the insurer would say you haven't taken reasonable precautions. But at the end of the day, insurers are there to cover our negligence. I mean, if you're driving in the road and you're driving to the back of somebody, you get paid still for that, and they'll pay the other party that you're driving to the back of, because I can't think perfectly all of the time, and I don't act perfectly all of the time.
And there's not an expectation that you will. That's why you have insurance.
Exactly. That's it. You cover yourself to cover your negligence at the end of the day.
Right.
So, but they do have these messages that go out. All the insurers basically do it now. And they do, you know, they will send out communications and stuff. But it's more as a risk mitigation thing, because if 70% of the people move their cars indoors, then at least they've won.
Right. I mean, if one person moves their car,
100%,
you know, it's value.
But there are insurers now that are more and more starting to write this into the policy. So as an example, I saw an insurer put into the policy that if you're fiddling with your cell phone while you're in the car, they're not going to pay the claim. Now, certainly in the old days, that always would, again, it's negligent behavior, but you cover negligent behavior. But as those claims have started to become more and more prevalent, that people are texting in the car,
right,
and that kind of thing. And now they wanted to insure us that have actually written it into the policy. Totally, you know.
But so even if you, I mean, if it hasn't been written in and you are texting, which is illegal and is actually something you'd be fined for, you would still be covered. Of course you would be, because even if you go through a red traffic light.
100%. If you're driving at 65 k's an hour, it's also illegal. But
exactly.
You get
exactly.
So they have a line in insurance, which has become quite gray now, which says we pay for negligent behavior, but we don't pay for reckless behavior. And if you're a lawyer, that's a very, very fine line.
Right.
So again, if you're going at 200 k's in a 60 zone, that would be reckless behavior. An insurer probably wouldn't pay there. But if you're playing with a cell phone, you know, is that reckless behavior? You're not going to want to endanger your own life, even though people are doing it unconsciously.
Would an insurance company use sort of a reasonable man test, a reasonable person test?
No.
They can't really, because
it's one over that, because they pay for negligence.
Correct.
And that's the test for negligence.
Because a reasonable person, would they drive 80 in a, or 70 in a 60 zone? Yes.
100%.
Right.
So that, it's a test that goes one step further.
Yes.
So you basically know that what you're doing is wrong, and you're taking a massive risk in doing what you're doing. It's not even a reasonable person. That person who's doing what they're doing almost say, because I've been insured, I just don't care. I'm insured, and they'll pay them. So it's that classic case of leaving the roof off when you're doing your renovations, and you know a rainstorm is coming. You know you're going to have damage, but you say, well, okay, I'm insured. That's an opportunity to cash in.
Right. And obviously insurance companies must be under tremendous pressure, even just processing-wise, this time of year.
100%, yeah. So when you get to the period between November and February, that's the That's the really peak
silly
time,
season,
obviously.
Right.
But, and it's not just lightning. There's a lot of theft that takes place over the holiday period.
Yeah, well, theft is also known. Statistically, it goes up.
It goes up at this period.
From November onwards.
And fraud claims obviously go up at this time of the year because, you know, January is the longest month of the year for everybody.
And
so our fraud guys are very much on the
I saw on Twitter somebody said that January is so long that babies born the 1st of January are almost ready to start grade one.
And the one other big issue I just wanted to raise is the load shedding issue, which is obviously quite topical as well, because load shedding leads to quite a lot of claims in itself,
surges,
potentially. You'll have surges onto your electric items. Also, your alarm batteries go flat. You go on holiday, there's a load shedding, your alarm goes flat.
Your freezer goes,
all these sorts of stuff. And again, what are your responsibilities in a load shedding situation? Nothing's written into the policy specifically for load shedding, although perhaps it's probably going to come, I would imagine. All those sorts of things have to be borne in mind as well.
Yeah. You know, one of the subjects that we're going to be touching on in the next few weeks here on the show is to look at ethical responsibility and where ethics go in the new world of innovation. And you had just come into studio when we were talking about this Mexican airline and we have no idea if it's true or not. I'm sure it's a funny ad. I can't imagine anyone's going to take it seriously, that if you have Mexican DNA, you get a discount on the flight to Mexico. But a question that I raised is, if we all start doing this DNA testing, which people are drawn to. I had a conversation with somebody yesterday, and she's desperate to have it done. And I said, why? Like, I have no, you know, it's like I find it difficult enough dealing with my living relatives, you know, to now start dealing with them from generations past. I'm not sure that I have the capacity to do that. But it is becoming more common. And I do see or foresee a situation that insurance companies might say, well, have you had your DNA tested? And if so, you know, can we see it? Because you might be more at risk over somebody else to certain things. What's your thoughts on that?
100%. So it's obviously more in the life insurance space.
I understand.
But it's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, we had the very famous case at the end of last year, the Momentum case.
Of course.
I can use the name because everybody knows it.
Yes.
Where he was asked about his blood sugar and he didn't disclose the true information about his blood sugar. So in the life space, they do blood tests and they do medical tests, and you've got to put your whole record on the line. So if you could show that it was reasonably relevant to the risk, then 100% they would be in within their rights. It's obviously got to be very carefully protected.
Right.
So you can't let that information go. But Ashkenazi Jews, not just negative. Obviously there's a strong tradition that we're very intellectual and we learn a lot. So it might be for your benefit that they want to take clever and more well-advanced people.
But do you think this is, is this foreseeable? This type, that in 5 years' time or in 10 years' time, I mean, it's a completely theoretical conversation, but in 5 or 10 years' time, could we see a situation that everybody's, you know, your DNA findings?
Well, it's not so theoretical at all, because if they're looking at all your possible diseases and they're asking for your blood, which is very confidential. I mean, we do have a situation now in the law where our regulators are starting to get very worried about insurance companies, the way they treat their customers, and they're passing this whole act, which is to regulate the conduct of insurance companies across the board, that they've got to be transparent and they've got to be upfront and they've got to safeguard your personal information. So there's going to be that interesting dilemma, is how ethical it is, because your confidential information, especially the medical stuff, is so...
Right, and we've got medical, without mentioning names, but you've got medical insurance companies that are selling life insurance, which are, you know, have a credit card, which gives you a discount for going to gym, which also has a short-term insurance. So these ethical issues obviously are a very, for the companies specifically, that are involved in various areas, because I do believe that South African corporates strive towards a high ethical standard. And it's obviously must take up a lot of planning and thought processing.
No, 100%. And I mean, with artificial intelligence today, and what goes on in the IT world, we don't have no idea how much data companies actually have on us. I mean, data is where the world is going. And I mean, I was in Israel last year at the iCrowd conference, and they had advanced insurance and where insurance is going in the next 5 years. And basically, it's all going to happen over artificial intelligence, specifically in the personal space. Everything's going to be done over the app. You're not even going to talk to an individual. You're going to do a selfie. You're going to do a video. That's how you're going to upload everything. Your claim will all be done on that basis. In fact, Hollard have already got a section where they've gone that way called Naked Insurance, which is all done over the app. It's all done on artificial intelligence. It is amazing. But they also hooked into property companies' data. They're hooked into Pick and Pay. They're hooked into Amazon. They're hooked into Google.
Yeah.
You know, and they've got all these deals with these companies where data is being sucked out of all these companies They know where you live before. All you have to do is say the address. They know exactly how many thefts have happened in that area.
Of course, because all of that information is available.
And it's instantaneously available. So, if you give your consent, and that's what it's all about, they'll be able to hook into your medical records. They'll probably have lines into your GP, all that kind of thing. So the ethical thing is where will that end and how? How far is it going to go?
So if you look at the insurance, in the insurance world, which is in the space that you're active in, do you think it's going to be almost unrecognizable in 10 years' time?
I think in 5 years' time, it's going to be unrecognizable. I mean, as I say, the most innovative insurer in the world right now is a company called Lemonade. I don't know if you've heard of them.
But that's got a completely different approach to insurance, doesn't it?
A totally different approach to insurance.
Explain what that is.
So what they say is obviously one of the main reasons people like to claim from insurance, or sometimes they overclaim. In fact, whenever I'm sitting at a Shabbos table or a bra, people who are the most honest people in the rest of their lives have no issue about overclaiming from an insurance company.
100%.
In fact, they're actually quite proud of it. And so the whole thing is
but that's because, it's because there's this perception that I always pay for my insurance, but I never get cover when I need it.
Exactly. When I have a claim, then they're the first ones I'm not paying you.
Exactly.
So whatever I can get out of them and the receiver of revenue, whatever I can get out of them, I've done well.
Right.
So what Lemonade have tried to do is change that whole mindset and say, how do we do it so we get psychologically, we change the insured's mindset. So what they do is they ask the insured for their favorite charity, and as an insurance company, they say, we're only going to take X amount for our costs and our administration. The rest of profit that we make we're not going to book as profit. We're going to give it to your favorite charity. So if you put in a fraudulent claim, you're actually stealing from your own school.
It's such a brilliant
Or your
concept.
Own shul or whatever the case
yes,
may be.
Yes.
It's an amazing concept in theory. And I said to him, his name is Daniel Schreiber, the CEO. I said to him, has he looked at the South African context? Because fraud here is a different level to the rest of the world. And he said he has done investigations here, and it is a bit early to bring that concept into South Africa. But I think at certain levels, what they're trying to say is, if the insurance company is not perceived as just taking your premiums as profit, but they actually just want to book a certain amount so that they can run and administer properly and make a small profit, and the rest really is there to cover you and to do good for society, you'll change everybody's mindsets in doing what's good for society as a whole, effectively.
I am chatting to Danny Joffe. He is you're head of legal, right?
Head of legal for Hollard Insurance.
Head of legal at Hollard Insurance. If you have a question, 34519 or 061-895-1019. 34519 or 061-895-1019. If I don't get to your messages, there does seem to be a bit of a problem with the line. So we're going to keep trying. That probably will come through in a short while, so just be patient with me. 34519 or 061-895-1019. I'm chatting with Danny Joffe, head of legal at Hollard Insurance, and we're talking about some of the difficulties that people are having with the claims and with storms. Karen from Edenvale saying this follows: can your expert please explain the following to me? Last month, my son's car was burnt out in an awful accident. It's now a Sasria claim, but our insurer is Hollard. Everything is supposed to be submitted via Hollard to forward to Sasria. This process keeps stalling, and Sasria and Hollard are blaming each other for the long time that it has taken to register the claim. Obviously, it's specifics which you can't know, but in principle.
Yeah, I'll give a little bit of background. So Sasria is a government insurance company, effectively, that deals with politically motivated claims. So if there's a strike, or if there's a demonstration, or there had to be a politically motivated attack by a political party, whatever the case may be, those claims are specifically excluded in your insurance policy. War-related claims, etc., are not covered in your insurance policy, and those are covered by Sasria. In fact, by law, Sasria are there to cover that. So your insurance policy excludes it, but Sasria picks it up as a separate insurance company, but almost because it's the same client and the same risk and the same details, Hollard acts in those, or any other insurer, acts almost as the intermediary or the go-between to organize the Sasria cover. So the decision
responsible.
It's not Hollard's decision. Hollard just submit the claim through to Sasria.
Hollard or any other short-term insurance company.
Any other insurance company would submit this. But the Hollard or any other insurance company would have a responsibility, I think, to follow up and just make sure that the claim is being dealt with. So, I mean, I'm happy to take the person's details off air and just get hold of our Sasria liaison person and see what's going on.
Okay.
There.
So Karen, with your permission, I'll give your details, but I do need you to send me a short message giving your permission. Otherwise, I don't like to give out up any information.
Just to emphasize, Sasha is a separate independent insurance company, as I say, run by different shareholders. Mm. So the insurance company who's submitting the claim to them makes no decision on their behalf. In fact, I know they're very strict. They're very difficult because you have the onus to prove that it was politically motivated, and it's not such an easy thing to show.
Right. Very, very interesting indeed. What advice can you give to people in terms of our current environment?
Right. So because I deal with the Ombudsman, I see a lot of the complaint reasons, and we take themes that obviously go through. And one of the most important things that we see is that people don't have proof of their jewelry at the end of the day. So you get these big jewelry claims and people get burgled out of the house. And a lot of the jewelry may be inherited or there might be gifts, etc.
Right.
So people don't think to go get evaluation certificates and to get proper proof of quantum. Even though it may be adequately insured, the insurance companies today, because, as I said, there's a lot of fraud claims that happen and a lot of claims that go through which are not always genuine, it becomes a vicious circle. The insurers then want more and more proof and they become more and more difficult to the honest people as well. So just to make the process go a lot quicker, anybody who is insuring their jewelry, please make sure that you got valuation certificates. Even if they're slightly outdated, but at least it gives a description of the item that you had. Because you might be an honest person and say, well, I've got a photo of myself wearing it, or I can give you a statement of people who see me wear it. You don't know whether it's costume jewelry or what type of jewelry it is, obviously.
True. That's true.
So you're not a dishonest person necessarily, but the insurer won't pay you out, or they'll give you a very small limit unless you've got a valuation certificate. So the first point I say is if you've got jewelry, go and get valuation certificates for the jewelry, because it always makes a big difference if you have an insurance claim. And very often the insurance policies now have safe clauses to say if you've got jewelry over a certain limit, you must put them in a safe while they're not being used. Not while they're not being worn, but while they're not being used. So if you wear a watch only to expensive weddings, and then it must be in a safe while it's not being used or worn in those situations. So check your policy very carefully. Things like safe clauses, also alarm warranties.
Alarm warranties is a
big issue. And you can often pay an insurance company slightly extra premium not to have the alarm warranty on your policy.
Well, the first time that we, in fact, came across this in ours was when we did have a robbery, and it was a Shabbat. We had gone out for lunch, didn't put the alarm on, because it was a Shabbat, and then discovered that we had an alarm policy.
Exactly.
And unfortunately, you don't want to discover it then. You want to know about it beforehand.
100%. So very often you can pay more premium to have the alarm warranty taken off your policy, or to have a much more benign alarm warranty policy. Mm. And that, by that I would mean it would say that as long as somebody's on the premises, you don't have to have the alarm on or something of that nature. And that's why the biggest part of advice is don't just go to the cheapest premium, because you hear these adverts on the radio all day of different insurance companies. I mean, just driving to work, I probably hear 6 or 7 different insurance companies adverts coming on. We pay the cheapest premium. We'll give you 800 rand if we can't beat your premium, et cetera, et cetera. But it's never apples for apples. And that's the important thing. So people go to the cheapest price. There's all these gimmicks that will pay you back, you know, part of your premium, but it's never apples for apples. So then they're going to be filled with alarm warranties and tracker warranties on your motor vehicle and all these very small limits on your jewelry, the safe clauses. It doesn't end. And those are the big issues. Another big thing, obviously, is driving under the influence of alcohol. In this country, has become a huge issue. I mean, not that you should be driving under the influence of alcohol anyway. And that's why it's good if you're religious, because you drink on Shabbos and you don't have to drive.
exactly.
That's the best time to go to drink. If you're going to drink, I'll drink on that. So think about that tonight when you have your whiskey. But at the end of the day, don't drive under the influence of alcohol, because insurance companies, and they're backed by the Ombudsman and they're backed by the regulator, because it's a massive problem in the country. Wherever there's decent proof that you've been driving under the influence of alcohol, I'm not just talking blood results, I'm talking evidence from other people that have seen you staggering around or that you look drunk, they often back you.
We actually have a call on the line, but I'm not going to go to the lines, just because in the interest of time. But the question that they want to know is, they say someone got drunk, speaking about which, at his home and did some damage to something. Is that a reasonable claim?
So
it's an interesting question.
Well, so often we don't pay for intentional damage, but this is probably not intentional damage.
Well, if a person's drunk, it's not intentional.
So we've had very interesting claims of people. You were speaking about bipolar earlier, which is an Ashkenazi disease. So we had a situation where a wife and a husband had a massive fight, and there was bipolar on the one spouse, and she totally lost it. She started breaking all his property. She smashed his TV. She smashed his car. She, in fact, took his car, drove out, and drove it to the neighbor's wall.
Ooh.
And this is deliberate. And in a case like where it's deliberate, and when you got bipolar, is it deliberate or not?
That's an interesting question.
We don't pay for intentional damage that's been caused.
Right.
But where you, in fact, there's an interesting case. They use the term smurdrunk, which is really drunk, where you're in the case where you actually don't know the consequences of what you're doing.
Right.
In a situation that couldn't be seen to be intentional, and there we probably would assist. But in a case where you've intentionally caused damage, as a result.
Right. And so I guess the question is the level of drunkenness. Did you know what you were doing?
Yeah,
and
was it accidental? Did you just trip over something and break it, or did you take a hammer and smash it in because whatever,
right,
whatever reason?
Right. It certainly sounds a bit intentional.
Right.
Someone got drunk at his home and damage something. Oh, so maybe, and
if it's accidental, then.
And
then
what happens if it's a visit in your home? Certainly.
Certainly. Remember, the drunken driving clause is only in your motor policy. It's not in any of the other policies.
Okay.
So it's only if you're driving drunk that we won't pay for the motor.
Right. Okay. Absolutely. Unfortunately, this is where we're out of time because this is such a fascinating subject. We might ask you to come back.
A lot of fun. Yeah, no, with pleasure.
Because I think there's so many interesting aspects to it. And very often I do believe that insurance companies get a bad rap because we don't educate ourselves in terms of and understand
what the product
is that we are engaged with.
And I mean, you see the good that we do. It's amazing.
1,000%. And I think it's very, very important to state that. It's vital, in fact, that we do appreciate that.